the fact that neither of them stood up for me and were like, come on, guys. And they can see me in the room across, like, we were like 15 minutes away from each other. And the fact that Matt wouldn't just come in and go, hey, hope you're okay. That was a disappointing part, I guess.
Hello and welcome to Shameless, the pop culture podcast for smart women who love dumb stuff. Today we're sitting down with Abby Chatfield, the 24-year-old runner-up on this year's season of The Bachelor. We wouldn't hop on a plane to Brisbane for just any Bachelor contestant, but we did that for Abby because we think her time in the public eye has been fascinating. Abby is considered one of the most controversial Bachelor contestants in history for one curious reason. Abby likes talking about sex. In fact, she was the first person to tell The Bachelor she wanted to have sex with him on camera. And while people like Zara and I found that amusing and refreshing, it is a reality dating show after all, and one where people have literally gotten engaged after a handful of weeks of knowing each other, many Australians disagreed with us and were not so welcoming of a woman openly embracing her sexuality on television. In fact, Abby quickly became derided for her physical interest in Matt by both the media and the general public. So, now that the dust has settled on her season and the barrage of criticism has died down a little, we wanted to ask Abby herself, what's it like to be slut-shamed by thousands of people at once? Here's Abby. Abby, welcome to Shameless in Conversations.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We have been so excited to have you since you were on The Bachelor. It's taken us a little bit to get this together. Not too long, but enough time's passed.
Yeah, it's not been too long at all.
How are you going with everything? Let's start there. We don't usually start there, but let's start with how are you feeling? How are you going?
I am so much better than I was even like the day after finale. I was so bad. All those interviews that I had, I was like not well at all. But when I got back to Brisbane, I was kind of like, oh, I have closure now. And I'm back to my normal life.
Mm.
And yeah, I'm feeling quite good actually, which is nice.
So the first question we always ask people is, what are you reading, watching or listening to that you would recommend to anyone listening to this?
Okay.
Oh no.
Here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
Okay. So during The Bachelor experience, I was reading Pachinko.
What?
Have you read that?
No.
Okay, so I lost the book though while I was in there. This is why I'm like, during the time in there at Hometowns, I lost it. It's basically about 1920s Korea during the Japanese occupation, and it's about a young girl who gets pregnant by an older Japanese man, and it's basically about how he has all this influence and then she ends up having to be hidden away. It's this really interesting thing. So that's a really good read. Haven't finished it.
But good enough to get started.
But we're starting Feminist Book Club again in my friendship group, so I need to probably post in Shameless podcast group about that.
Abby, the next question that we always ask our In Conversation guests is, what were you like as a kid? What was your childhood like?
I grew up at the Gold Coast. I think I was just really loud. I wasn't really naughty. I have a single mum, which I spoke about on the show as well. And my dad left when I was quite small. So it was just myself, my mum, and my sister. And yeah, it was pretty relaxed. Like I can't ever remember being in trouble or doing anything naughty. And we moved up to Brisbane when I was 8. And then mum got remarried and that was a disaster. And is kind of the reason why I had 3 jobs in grade 12 and everything like that.
That doesn't sound like the easiest or most straightforward childhood.
No, not at all. No. Mum is so great and my sister and I are really close. And mum always worked really hard. She's a teacher. And she always worked really hard to be able to afford to send us to private school. So we got a really good education. Both went to uni. My sister has a degree in fashion design. So everything's, I guess, worked out in the end. But from when I was in probably grade 8, there was this court case going on until Hometowns.
Wow.
Yeah, that he was found not guilty. And I can't really talk about it because he's found not guilty. But there was a whole thing with money. And yeah, so basically it was like 10 years of a court case. And that, and I had to work from like year 8. And I always did hectic hours after school. Like in grade 12, I was finishing school at 3:30. And then getting the bus to South Bank, which is like half an hour from my school, running to work, getting to work, finishing at 11, getting the 45-minute bus back to home. And then weekends were like 6 a.m. to 2 p.m., then like 4 to 11 and like an all-day Sunday shift. So it was like I missed out on so many things in grade 11 and 12. And that's kind of why I applied for The Bachelor, which is a weird come around?
It's not a weird come around, I don't think, because that's what my next question was. How formative is that for you? I mean, you must miss out on a social life. You must feel like you miss out on a lot. Walk us through then coming to the point where you start applying. Like, what's your mental process? What's your emotional process? And talk us through those things that you missed that may have led you to apply.
Yeah, so my Tinder got blocked, right?
What do you mean your Tinder? How does your Tinder get blocked?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I've gone on like 2 Tinder dates in my life. One went really well, dated the guy for 6 weeks. The other one was like a one night stand.
And the things that people do on Tinder as well.
I was going to say.
I mean, lots of people don't get blocked who should get blocked on Tinder.
Definitely get blocked. So I think maybe it was just weird guys reporting me for not replying, maybe, because I hadn't downloaded it in 6 months. But anyway, and then I was like, okay, well, Tinder's blocked, that's out. And then I thought, I'll apply for The Bachelor. So my roommate and I sat there that night and applied, and it was like the last week before you could apply. And then I had an interview 2 days later, the audition 2 days later.
Oh, my God.
And I was the last audition in Australia. And then I got on. So it just kind of happened. That was in January. And then 4 weeks later, my medicals were all done. My psych test was all done. And then I was sort of like, do I actually want to do this? I'm 23. Like, this is a whole thing. I feel like anyone who says they apply for this show purely because they can't find a partner is just lying. Like, I'm sorry. Like, all those girls in there are beautiful, young, smart, great. But I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind dating someone. And also, I've missed out on so much in my life. And the only real reason why I wouldn't do it was because of financial things or because of like, oh, well, my work, or I'd have to leave mum and I'd have to not see my sister. And I kind of was just like, I want to do something for me.
And well, that was it.
Yeah, and that was it. And
it would be such a good experience, right? Mm. I know. I mean, everyone goes on be like, I'm just here for love. But the experience is why you're all probably here. Of course you want to find love. Of course you want to find a partner. But it's a cool thing to do and to turn back on in 20 years' time and be like, hey, I went on the biggest show in Australia.
Oh, my God, yeah. And even if you're on for one night, you're like, oh, it'll be a bit of a laugh, won't it? Like going on, getting in a fun dress and meeting all these women, meeting a guy you might like. At the end of the day, we know there's only going to be one person that wins. Mm. You're not like...
The odds are against you.
The odds are definitely against you, as I found out. And I was open to liking Matt, but I didn't think that I would like the person. Like my mum, my sister, all my friends were like, you're not going to like the person they cast as The Bachelor. And I was like, no, I won't. But like, we'll see how it goes. May as well try. Because I've had horrible ex-boyfriends before. And everyone was like, just let them choose for you for once. Like give someone else some power because you have really poor taste. And then I even told Matt this. Like this is the thing that annoys me as well about me being manipulative to Matt or lying to him. I told him all of this. I was like, oh, I applied for a laugh because I got on. I was like, I may as well do it. And I explained the whole, that's when the free jobs and mum thing came up on that day. I told him that I applied just because like, why not? And I didn't think that I would like him. And then actually liking him, that's why I think it hit me so hard when I didn't end up with him, because I was like, oh no, but I actually do want this.
What, if anything, did you love about being on the show?
I think I just like the crew the most. Like I loved the crew. I really bonded with our minders, the producers, hair and makeup, because obviously I didn't have that many friends. So, yeah.
Talk us through that not many friends side of things. What happened there? Because obviously viewers are going to get one version of things in that a lot of women in the house had a bone to pick with you. Mm. It was never super clear what the bone was. It was typically just phrased as Abby's not here for the right reasons, and that was it. What's your take on that? Why do you think there was these little spot fires coming up all the time with other girls?
It's really interesting because I kind of felt like I was always not really part of things from the start, like just little things, even before the kiss at the cocktail party. I guess that's when it kind of started. But before that, everyone would come down and be ready for the cocktail parties. And everyone else would be like, oh, my God, you look beautiful, Sagan. You look beautiful, Eleanor, you know, like to everyone. And then no one would ever say it to me. And someone in crew noticed it. And I was like, no, it's fine. Like, I just don't look very nice. I was like, oh, no, it's all right. So I don't want to say it was jealousy, but I don't know if they just didn't like that I was so young, because the other two young girls there were Rachel and Vacco, and I don't think that they saw Rachel and Vacco as contenders really, for whatever reason. And then after the kiss in the orchard, that obviously blew everything up, and everyone was mad at me for that. And it was really weird watching it back, because I thought that the issue started after I told Matt about the dog C-word thing. Mm.
A true highlight in Australian bachelor history.
What did we call it on the podcast? I've already forgotten.
Oh, I can't even remember. A cupcake.
A dog. Yeah, a dog, because it's like obviously we are pretty like free with our swear words, but I feel like we draw the line at cupcake.
We draw the line at cupcake for sure.
It's a good line to be drawn. And the two rules mum gave me for the show, which not say the C word and not show my nipples. I did both. So like... Good on me. And Matt was...
Look, if you're going to break one rule, break them both. For listeners who may not have watched every episode of the show, can you walk us through that orchard thing that might you think might have set things off that kiss?
Yeah. So we had this photo shoot, as you always do, and there was obviously a few like up-close moments with Matt. And the thing is, I got to watch every single photo shoot, so I saw everyone else get that close with him. I saw everyone else do the same stuff that I was doing. But because my shot had porn music over it, it looked like I was like being this like siren, like trying to get in, but it's like everyone else was doing that. So that's when everyone started to, I guess, talk about me, as you saw in with Sagan and Mary and everyone. And then that night at the cocktail party, there was a like a Survivor-style voting situation where they put Sagan and me up against each other. And at the time, Sagan and I were really good friends. And I was saying to the girls, like, obviously, they always showed was reasons why I want to win, because people say, tell us the reasons why you want to get voted into C Mad. But I was like,
such a pickle. How do I articulate this?
Not sounding psycho. And then I was mostly just like, guys, I hate this. Like, I'm friends with Sagan. I don't want to start this weird women against women thing. Like, I was like, had my feminist flag flying the entire time, and I never showed any moments of it. Then I ended up getting time with Matt, and then we kissed in the orchard after I said that I wouldn't kiss him.
Whoops.
I mean, the world's going to end.
I mean,
did you feel lonely in the house?
Yeah, I was super lonely. The day after that cocktail party when I kissed him, everyone was kind of avoiding me. Sagan even said to me, no one wants to speak to you right now. And that was when the dog cupcake word thing was said around the pool about Matt being that because he kissed me. Like, some girls were saying they weren't mad at me, they were mad at Matt for not putting in enough effort to kiss me, as though I needed to be taken on a single date first for me to kiss him.
They're concerned for you.
Oh, they're really concerned for me, yes.
But what about this idea of girl code? You know, it comes up a lot. Even on The Bachelorette, it comes up as like guy code or whatever. Like, have the people's back around you. You're the ones you're living with. What do you think about that? Because it just seems absurd that you need to respect the wishes and not kiss this guy you're meant to date because of 20 other women who are also trying to date the same guy. Like, did that girl code thing come up as much in the house amongst you guys as it did on TV? And it does on TV?
I think it did behind my back. I don't really see the point in girl code. I feel like we should just all live by a normal, like, human code and just be nice to each other. Like, why be like, well, the girls don't want this. We're also in a competitive environment where you're trying to date a man, like, this stupid cliche, but like, I'm not here to make friends. Like, I have enough friends at home who are great, and I've come here and I'm taking 3 months out of my life to date this man. And after I've been isolated in the house, why would I put all of you above me? Like, why would I, if you guys are saying all these things in interviews and boxies, all of you are saying things about me to Matt, you're all sitting around the house when I'm on a date talking about me, why would I then let you step in front of me to date someone that I'm falling in love with? I don't understand it. So,
I am curious, Abby, moving away from the girls for just a second. I think we might come back to them. One thing that I thought when I was watching you and Matt together is that he wouldn't be so affectionate with someone that he doesn't choose. So in my head, when I was watching some of these scenes with the two of you, I was thinking, like, it has to be Abby. Abby has to win, because no man would go on national television and literally roll around on a beach with a girl that he doesn't pick at the end. Surely he'd be thinking about this and be acting in a way.
A little bit of foresight.
That's in line.
Yeah. He chose our hometowns apparently, so that's good.
Did you ever think that when you were being so affectionate and so physical with each other, did it ever occur to you that it wouldn't be you? Because logically you would think that you are the obvious choice if he's behaving that way.
Yeah, so I guess it's hard to say, because at the time I thought that everyone was doing this with their dates. I thought everyone was having a beach hump. I thought everyone was just going for it, because you don't know what other girls are doing, and because past hometowns were separated, so we don't get to talk to other girls at all. I think it is really disappointing, obviously, watching back, knowing that he wasn't doing it with the other girls. And seeing him in interviews now saying that he had decided by hometowns, I mean, don't talk to me off camera. Like, you have the option to not speak to me off camera. And I actually said that at finale. They didn't show this, but I said to him, you shouldn't have acted like that off camera last night, because I was with him the night before. My date was the day before. It wasn't it was switched around, right? So I don't understand why he did that. He didn't need to do that. On camera, I'm like, whatever, because that's the point of the show. I'm not going to be like, you led me on when we did this on the beach on camera. It's off-camera stuff that I'm sort of just like, why? Why at 10 p.m. the night before finale are you saying the exact same things you were to me on camera, off camera?
So off camera, he was just as affectionate, just as loving, just as adoring.
Yeah, like crew would laugh because they'd be like, oh, stop. Like, because they'd have to stand next to us. So we're like pashing the night before.
Did you ever ask him, like, is it me?
No, I was so scared of him. I was so scared of him. Like, kind of by the end, top three dates, I was like so comfortable, obviously. Finale, I went back to like first date vibes. I was so scared. I was like scared to tell him anything negative. Like, as you saw, I didn't tell him about the Kate thing because I was like, what's the point at this point?
Mm. For those who are listening who aren't across it, Kate is Matt's best friend. You and Kate did not get along too well.
No, Kate and I weren't the best of friends. I wasn't happy about it in the interview, as we saw.
That also was curious to me. When you were doing the interview about Kate, did you already know that you weren't going to be picked at the end?
No, because that was before my – no, I don't think so. I think I was really – I cried the whole way home from that meeting the friends thing. I was so angry that she had the audacity to question my age when it's like, I'm still here. Like, stop asking about my age. And the marriage and kids thing had been settled with Matt and I like a month before this, and he'd asked me every time he saw me about marriage and kids. And I was just sort of like, after hometowns, just drop it. And when I got back to talk to Kate and Jason and Matt was like happy that I got into roasting and that I seemed a little bit upset. And I thought it was really unfair because my hometown was just everyone being obsessed with him.
Mm.
And then he was happy that I got some sort of roasting from his friend. And yeah, I don't know. I just can't.
By the time the show started to air and you have to relive everything again, did you make a decision to watch every episode?
Yeah, I watched every episode, didn't watch any alone. It was actually fine. It's strange. Like, my emotions mirrored exactly every cocktail party. Like, episode 1 and 2, I was just like laughing at myself. And then 3 and 4, when things started to get a bit weird with Sagand and the girls, I was just upset, sad, and like felt really angry at the girls. And I wasn't really thinking about Matt. And then every time I have a single date, I'd have feelings for Matt. So it was like, by finale, after I sent that video when I was drunk into the podcast group, I was absolutely back to being in the headspace of being in love with him. So yeah, it's strange the way it mirrors. I didn't think it would.
Coming up after the break, some thoughts on shame and how Abby will continue to reject it. But first, a word from today's sponsor. Did it feel like being bullied by the girls?
Yeah, but we couldn't use that word. So
they wouldn't let you use that word?
I just think I didn't want to use that word because I didn't want it to seem like I was
a victim.
Yeah. And I thought my edit was going to be everyone was going to be annoyed at me for being this, like, because I would cry every single day, like every interview, every Voxy. Like, there were multiple Voxies that I couldn't use because I was sobbing so hard. They were just saying, like, we can't. Like,
sobbing about the treatment from the girls or sobbing about the, like, overwhelming experience?
Just miscellaneous things. just like, oh, Kate's here. Oh, Sagan has said another thing about me. Ellie said another thing about me. Matt has asked me again about the marriage and kids thing. When Laura and Snez came, the producer asked me if I was wondering what it was like to be pregnant or something. Like, it was like just like a general, like, oh, like, isn't it nice to see Snez and Laura pregnant? Wouldn't it be nice to be pregnant with someone you love? And because I had an abortion last year, I decided, like, sobbing. So it was like I would just cry at random things.
How did they respond to that? Did they know that you had that abortion? Did you tell them in that moment? Did you say, this is why I don't want to talk about this?
The producers didn't know, and they were lovely, and they stopped the interview then because I was crying again. Because I would cry every time, so yeah.
And you told Matt about the abortion, is that right?
Yeah, I told Matt about the abortion after the moving date when it was brought up again about the marriage and kids thing. So the things that were brought up were that I was there for a social profile, for Bachelor in Paradise, and the marriage and kids thing. But I was just sort of like, I'm so sick of having to justify why I haven't been so screaming from the rooftops, I want kids with this woman in this house. And why I'm a bit hesitant to say that I want children because I've had an abortion a year ago. And I think at that time, I felt very guilty for saying that I wanted kids because I'd aborted one in March last year. So once I said that to him, I whispered it to him, and then his producer didn't hear me and said, Abby, you're going to have to say it out loud. And then I turned around and looked dead in the camera and said, I had a fucking abortion last year. Okay. They were all
so
loving.
They wanted to use it. They were going to use it for TV or no?
No, I don't think they actually heard me because I whispered in his ear like, I had an abortion last year. They thought it was about the girls, like okay. Me saying something about another girl. Yeah. And they were great. The editing sucks, whatever, but making a dramatic show. The crew that were on set always took such good care of me, So after that, I went and like sobbed on that bed in the fetal position, like scream crying. And I was like, I'm going to leave if I can't see Matt. So then Matt came in and got me and we had a bit of a chat and then he was like, I'm dropping it.
Why do you think that there was such like a visceral emotional reaction for you in that moment? Do you think it was just that guilt? Do you think that you hadn't dealt with it properly? What was it? Have you tried to reflect and sort of almost self-analyze about your reaction to having that conversation on the show?
Yeah, I think it is a guilt. It is a guilt thing still. Like after I had my abortion, I was in a very deep depression for like 3 weeks after. And my boyfriend at the time was literally the worst. He went out the night that I had my abortion because he wanted to be with the boys and have a few drinks, even though I was like holding onto his shirt being like, please don't leave me. And then he told me in the weeks afterwards that I wasn't fun anymore. So that was like a whole experience in itself. And then bringing it up with Matt, being embarrassed, being ashamed, being scared that he would think differently of me, as well as being so exhausted of explaining why I haven't said that I want to have kids, like to these girls. Like I never said that I didn't, but I wasn't being like, I can't wait to have babies because 9 months before I'd aborted one and I felt guilty. So, and also the fact that I'd said it on camera and I wasn't sure if they were going to use it. Yeah, it was lots of little things. And I was just, this is 2 months in. Like you're on edge at all times. You've had no contact with anyone except for hit phone calls here and there. Yeah, it was just a really emotionally intense experience.
What makes you want to talk about your abortion publicly today?
I feel like, because at the time I was begging producers to not include it, but I think that being on The Bachelor has made me grow so much and even during airing. And I just think that in the house, I told the girls about my abortion. And I kind of did it in a way that was to, because I don't want other women to feel ashamed for having abortions. And I feel like it was sort of used against me. And other things that I told them in the media were used against me. And I just don't want other, sorry.
Don't be sorry.
I just don't want other women to, like I want, the Bachelor is just this perfect, like these perfect women on this perfect show and everything's happy and great. And you're just falling in love and it's this easy stuff. But it's not easy. And I just want people to know that like, a lot of women have abortions, and whether or not you know they have abortions or not, it's okay. And I just don't want people to be shamed for that or feel internal shame. And maybe someone who's kind of in the public eye saying they've had an abortion and that it's okay will help them.
And Abby, I think the incredible thing about this is that people have tried to put shame on you already. Mm. And I think the fact that you can come out and say that and say, I reject that shame, I won't take it on, is so powerful. Mm. Because since this show, I think, yeah, you've had people who have try to dump shit on you and you've had people who have tried to give you all this ridiculous hate and criticism. But as much as that's come, so many women have also come to have your back and kind of held your hand and stood with you. That's been so brilliant to see, the sisterhood that has emerged from you. Mm. And that's from you coming out and you being proud of your story and telling everyone else they can fuck off with all the shame they want to put on you.
That's true. You've got to rise above it first for everybody else to come with you. Have you felt that ever since the show?
Yeah, so much. Ever since I was still getting like abusive messages until finale night. And then after finale, when I started doing all my interviews on Friday, and then I made that post about slut shaming and that other post about editing photos and everything, most people are just messaging me really nice things now, which is so, so good. And I think that's also why I feel okay to talk about my abortion now with you guys, because
it's a safe space.
Yeah.
And it's and your like, terms, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I just think that, you know, people are kind of getting to see their actual me, that I'm an actual person rather than this weird edited like caricature of a person on this show that is what, 2 hours a week. And I got, even though I got the most screen time, I was like half an hour a week on personality. Mm. So,
on the topic of shame and slut shaming in particular, do you think Australia has a continued problem with women who embrace their sexuality?
Oh, absolutely. And I said this on the project that I didn't really realize until this aired, because my friends are all feminists and my family all are feminists, and I didn't really realize people still thought this way. I thought it was very 2007. And then now,
flashback to Kevin 07.
Kev comes out. But I really thought, not that it was dumb, but I didn't think that it would be to this degree. And I think it's the reason why a lot of people thought that I was manipulative. I thought that I was like teasing him with my sexuality. People thought that I must be dumb, or I must be mean, or I must be all these negative things if I'm sexual. I have this connotation with it. I don't know. I don't know what the problem is. I think I've gotten so far in my thinking of not slut-shaming that I actually can't comprehend what the issue is with liking sex. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Were you surprised with the edit around that? Like, not just, I mean, we've spoken about the public reaction to it, but were you surprised that that's the kind of box that they wanted to put you in?
I was pretty surprised, because it was weird that I was like sexy and confident, because I was the most insecure person on that show. Chelsea and I called ourselves the worthless two. Oh,
really?
Yeah, literally. After that final rose ceremony, we were like, Matt, like, you've made a mistake. You've got the worthless two in your top two, babe. Like, Chelsea and I were really close. And watching it back and this edit of me being like this confident, cocky, sexy bitch was so weird, because I felt so insecure and so weird all the time being filmed, and so nervous about whether or not Matt liked me. Like, every time Eleanor would have to G me up before a rose ceremony and be like, if you go home, I'm going to eat this fake flower arrangement. Like, she's like, no, like, every time. So yeah, it was a really weird thing to see my like normal lived experiences played back with porn music behind them, and been like, okay, that's sexy now. Particularly when the contrast of my kiss in the orchard and Eleanor's kiss in the orchard. Now, Eleanor and I are very good friends, but like, my kiss got that 80s porno music. And like,
it's like a rant round.
Yeah.
Like, and then like, forgive me. It's fucking weird.
It was fucking weird. It was fun. And I was like, da-na, da-na. Like, I was like slithering out of like the bushes in the orchard.
Coming to get him.
Hi, I'm a snake.
Literally, I'm a snake. And then, so we're both wearing red. We're both in red dresses, wearing red lipstick. The same thing happens. His glasses fog up, red lipstick. Ellen and I, exact same thing. I get attacked, abused by the Australian public for being a slut and for fucking, for kissing him at a cocktail party. How dare I? All the other girls. Eleanor does it and gets wifey music.
She got fairy tale music.
Mm. Yeah.
And
and it's funny. And it's like, oh, my hair's lipstick over his face. How funny. And like, that's the edit that both of us should have gotten. I'm not saying that Eleanor shouldn't have gotten that, but I should not have gotten this sex villain music that I got when I would sip a glass of wine. I got sex villain music. Or a snake. Or a... Let me have my wine per second 1 hour. Like, I literally would like have a sip of, I noticed so many times I would blink and I'd be like, like I'm coming out of like the bushes to like get the girls. Like,
Abby, this is the thing, right? In that every season of The Bachelor, I feel like on podcasts like this, people come out and analyze it and go, how do we all fall for it? What the fuck? But again and again and again, we all do fall for it, particularly the media, I would say, this time around. I know you just mentioned the project, and I really loved when you went on the project, actually. But on finale night, they called you a thirsty hornbag. Did you watch that?
I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it live, but I did see the clip on Facebook or something.
Why do you think something like the project, because I love the project. I love it. It's one of my favorite pieces of media. Oh. It's very progressive, very intelligent. But that clip was so fucking slut-shamey. This wasn't like Sky News. This was the project and they were slut-shaming you. What did you make of that?
I didn't get it. I didn't know why they decided to do that. It felt like the entire time it was being led up to being like Chelsea. Or like Jason said, Chelsea's wife and Abby's like slutty girlfriend. Like, that's all it was. And then for them to kind of put that kind of nail in the coffin, it was disappointing. Maybe it was meant to be funny. When I heard that, I was just like,
because they gave Chelsea some type of label as like wife material or something, I believe.
I don't know what.
Which is interesting that if you embrace your sexuality, you can't be wife material.
No, even though that's the one defining fact, or one of the major defining factors of a romantic relationship. so you don't want to fuck your wife? Like, I don't understand. Like, I actually don't get
celibacy.
It. Like, it's a Madonna whore complex that Australia has, and it was the epitome of Madonna whore at the end. Mm. And I remember I said to someone at the start, I was like, after the orchard thing, I was like, this is getting revved up so that it's Madonna whore. This is going to happen. Everyone was like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, they can't do that. You're like, no. And I got to the end and it was just so, it was so clear, and everything that was in the media, everything that was on the show, it was just like, Chelsea's worthy because she hasn't grinded, like grinded?
Yeah, grinded. She hasn't grinded. We'll go grinded. With grinded.
She hasn't grinded him on a beach, and because Abby is horny and wants to sleep with someone she's dating, then she isn't worthy of love.
What a slut.
What a fucking whore.
Speaking of the mainstream media, the day after the finale aired, I remember there was this clip of you in at Nova and you were being interviewed live on air. And as you were being interviewed live on air, Matt and Chelsea walk behind the window and I can't remember who was interviewing you, but they turn to you and say, oh, look at that.
What a coinkydink.
Matt and Chelsea are right behind you while we're out on air, and you hadn't seen Matt and since he broke up with you. And then that video was almost used as like a punchline that day. It was went viral. There were articles about it. How did it feel in that moment when you're already incredibly vulnerable, you're expected to do a full day of press when you are at a very low point, to then feel like your heartbreak is like the butt of somebody else's joke?
Yeah, it was really horrible. So 10 minutes before that, I'd been on the phone to Carl Sanderlands. That was immediately after that phone call when he was telling me about the first time that Chelsea and Matt had sex.
Yeah, that was also so fucked.
That was also fucked.
Are we surprised, Carl Sanderlands?
I mean, it was going quite well until that happened. But so this is like one after the other. So I just stopped crying from that. And then I walk in and I'm like, okay, one more radio interview, it's fine. And that happens. And
because they purposely did that. Surely they purposefully manipulated it so that they put you in a studio side by side.
I mean, I don't know. People have.
I'll say it. You don't need to.
Think of the camera angle as well. That has to be a very particular camera that's set up to catch the side of your face and then walk.
Were you in
the
Sydney
side.
Or Melbourne?
Sydney.
Sydney has a bunch of studios at every mainstream radio station, and they would know exactly where every person is in every studio that day. That would have been planned.
Yeah. At the end of the day, this is what, like, similar to the fact we're making a show, right? Whatever, they want to get clicks. Like, I can cop it. When I watched what Chelsea and Matt had said, and when they were laughing about Matt bolting when he saw me, I was so angry. I was like, Chelsea gets nervous and like, I love her, and maybe she was just laughing at it because she got giggly, but like the fact that neither of them stood up for me and were like, come on guys, and they can see me in the room across, like we were like 15 minutes away from each other, and the fact that Matt wouldn't just come in and go, hey, hope you're okay, that was a disappointing part, I guess.
Must be incredibly disappointing. And how do you get closure from something like this?
I think I got it from that because I was so mad at him. I was like, that, like, you're not the person that I thought you were. If I was Bachelorette and I saw my runner-up in a radio studio, I would ask the publicist, like, does he want to speak to me? Do they want to have an interaction with me? I would have said yes and would have been, I hope you well. I'm sorry. Awesome. Have a good one. Bye. Hey, Chels. See you in a few weeks. That's all it would have been. But the fact that it was avoided, I was just like,
But it's not even just avoiding it. It's mocking you on air.
It's laughing about it and laughing about the fact that I'm by myself doing press all day and they're walking around getting praised for how amazing their relationship is, which it is, but I'm then by myself, my publicist. It was really hard, but I think I'm glad it happened because I was just like, you know what? Don't like you.
Biggest blessing in disguise.
Biggest blessing. I also... yeah, I have a few reasons why I'm glad I didn't win.
Care to share?
If you'd like to hear them, I've thought about this a lot.
Yes, I love it's like, so this is the work I've done.
I have some notes, girls. No, well, I don't think anyone's ever really spoken about this, but I've thought about this a lot, and I've thought about this in the house as well. And the fear of winning is that there's this inherent power dynamic in a relationship like that. And I feel like if I had won, because I've had abusive boyfriends before, I would have just fallen back into this thing of like, not that Matt's abusive at all, but like this dynamic where it's like you're trying to impress the other person all the time.
It's like, you picked me, so I need to live up to your expectations.
Yes. And like, I know that Matt is not a person at all, but you just feel this way. For 3 months, you're conditioned to feel like all you need to do is make this man love you. And getting out of that, you don't stop. You don't just go, okay, we're fine now. Like you go, okay, now he's the most wanted man in Australia. Everyone thinks he's hot and smart and amazing and funny, which he is, but you have to keep that while also undercover and then for years afterwards under pressure from the media. So I literally can't comprehend how Chelsea and Matt are doing this right now because it seems so difficult. Also, Kate, that's my reason.
I was like, wait, what? All right. Of course.
How do you go with the people from the show? I know that you're friends with the Minders and some of the producers, but what about the girls on the show, the women on the show, and Matt? I'm guessing Matt, no contact.
So I talked to Eleanor quite a bit, even though we had like some weird stuff at the start, and everyone was like, why are you guys friends? Like, we're very good friends. I really like Eleanor. Ellie and I have messaged quite a bit. Chelsea and I message. Tattoo Jess.
Oh, yes.
Love her. She's like a feminist queen. She's so smart, so funny. She's fantastic. Love her.
Have you had any of the girls after the show, seeing how it was edited and seeing the backlash towards you, have any of the girls changed their mind and gone, you know what, we treated you like shit?
No. Eleanor and I sorted things out before it went to air because I went and saw her in Perth. And Eleanor, whatever. Actually, Ellie messaged me and said sorry for telling Matt or something, which was nice. Ellie's, you know, we're fine. But other than that, I don't really speak to any of them, really.
You didn't go there to make friends.
I didn't go to make friends. Well, I have so many friends. Like,
I'm full.
I'm sorry, girls. Like,
do you have any regrets about going on the show, being on the show, about the whole experience?
Not really. I mean, I was just myself. Part of me wishes that at finale I'd had a more eloquent response.
You were so great at finale.
Oh, I wish that I
Your eyes were ice cold.
Yeah, that's all you need, some ice cold eyes.
And the scoff when he was talking. Like, I could... Because I honestly thought it was me, obviously. So my producer had been like, okay, if it's you, what are you going to say? If it isn't you, what are you going to say? And I was like, I mean, like, I don't really want to plan. I just want to see how we go. And she was really good and really... She did as much as she could, but I was very stubborn. I was like, whatever. I might ask him why. And that's why I was just like, why? Why? Because that's all I had planned. That's the only regret I have, really. I think that maybe if I did it again, I wouldn't tell Matt about the dog cupcake thing. Not because I felt like it was the wrong thing to do, but because it made everything else snowball.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a snowball.
It brought a lot of drama into your life.
Yeah, and I think selfishly I'd want to not say it to him because I wouldn't want all that drama again. But at the end of the day, the way that I thought about it was, if I was a bachelorette and one of the guys was sitting around the pool being like, she's a fucking slut or something like that, like what they were doing to Ali last year, I'd be like, please tell me, you obviously have no respect to me as a person.
We cannot finish this interview without asking you the question about the news story of the week around you, which is, what is the deal with you and Todd?
Give us the tea.
You love him.
I love him. I mean, so Todd obviously stood up for me a lot online, which was lovely. And we've hung out a few times.
Todd, for those unfamiliar, was from Ali Oakden's season. And he was the knight in shining armor was what he came
out. Knight in shining runner up.
Yeah. Sad. He's so beautiful though.
Rest in peace.
He's really attractive, the work, Abby.
Really attractive, really funny, really smart.
Lives in Perth.
Lives in Perth, which is sad. Probably not. We'll see. Time will tell. It was in Perth. Everyone's saying that we're dating. We're not officially dating. We're just
hanging out.
Yeah, he was in Brisbane, and we went to the beach. Had a fun time. He's really hot.
You're 23, 24 now.
24 now, guys. Ooh. On the big 24.
Happy birthday for whenever it was.
But he's also like a very he's a non-performative feminist, which is so good. He's like very supportive, and like because he grew up with five sisters. And his mum's lovely. So it's like, he's just...
How was that little drop? His mum is lovely. I've met the family.
Oh, no. Haven't met the family.
Oh, the Daily Mail will love that. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
How to hand them headlines.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, so he's cool. I guess time will tell.
How many dates have there been, Abby? Give us like a number.
A few.
A handful.
A handful of dates. Handful, but they've got to be pretty serious dates because you're traveling across the country.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but... I get staff travel. I get like really cheap flights. Okay. So
it's still a lot. So it's still hours.
Yeah, 6 hours of my life.
6 hours of your life. But what's 6 hours in the grand scheme of life?
For a night in shining armor.
I know. In the quest for love.
Abby,
what is it?
Thank you so much for your time. Also for speaking about things that weren't probably particularly easy for you to talk about today, but we so appreciate that you spoke to us about them and felt safe enough to speak about them here. And congratulations on it all. I know that's a weird way to put it, but the way that you've dealt with everything since the show has aired has been very remarkable to see. I don't think you could teach that in a publicity class. Aww. Not that it has been publicity, but a really good training ground for just standing up for yourself, I think.
Thank you. That's so nice. I don't know what to say.
No, you're an actual delight. And we're really, really grateful that you shared what you shared with us today, because I think our community has really rallied behind you, and we're happy to see that, because I just think it's good to call shit out for what it is. And I think what happened to you was blatant slut shaming. And I think the more that we can identify that with future seasons of things like The Bachelor or other reality shows, the better.
Yeah, I think so as well. Thank you so much for having me
on. Keep popping up in our Facebook group.
Oh, I will.
More videos, please. More drunken videos.
Reality Check?
Yes.
I'll be in there. I'll be a top fan.
Thank you, Abby.
Thank you so much for listening to this In Conversation episode of Shameless with Abby Chatfield. If you loved Abby, please do go follow her on Instagram at Abby Chatfield. But before I give you the spiel on where to follow us, you would have heard that Abby mentioned Reality Check at the very end of that chat there. That is actually the name of our brand new podcast launching tomorrow morning. Zara, what on earth is Reality Check?
Well, we know how much you guys love reality television content, so we've made a podcast recapping the very best trashy shows that young women are talking about. To kick us off, Michelle, we are obviously starting with Love Island Australia.
Absolutely, we are. Every Friday for the next 6 weeks, our resident reality TV obsessives, Annabelle and Maver, are going to deep dive on the week that was, covering the highbrow and the lowbrow content, because it is all equal, Zara.
It is all equal. Think of Reality Check as the podcast for women who love The Bachelor but want it with a side of the Bechdel test. Search for Reality Check in your favourite podcast app now and click subscribe so you can be the first to listen as soon as it drops.
Until then, if you want to chat about anything that we covered in this interview with Abby, please do come into our Facebook group. It is called Shameless Podcast Community. If this is the first time you've listened to Shameless, click subscribe if you're on Apple Podcasts, or if you're on Spotify, click follow and you will be notified whenever a new episode of Shameless drops. We interview Bachelor contestants and reality stars and influencers and media personalities every week, so you will probably love the other interviews we do as well. Join our Facebook group, follow us on Instagram. We're on there at Shameless Podcast. Other than that, we will be back in your ears on Monday. Bye, guys.